Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. It's been a long season, Bruce. It's been a long season. Long season. And the Oilers end the regular season with a, 5-1 in the end? 5-1 loss. Mm-hmm. To the Avalanche of Colorado. Bruce, by the end of this podcast, we will know who the Oilers are going to play in the first round. Vegas tanked its game and lost, not wanting to face the Oilers.
At home to the Ducks.
And it looks like LA's in the process of tanking its game, not wanting to play the Oilers. They've just given up two quick goals, highly suspect goals in the third period to the Chicago Blackhawks. Both teams now are officially doomed, as far as I'm concerned, both, you know, with their tanking here. There's no way they're going to beat the Oilers. That's my position. Anyway, we'll talk about that in the conundrum.
I'm going to keep glancing over here. I'll warn people, but it's 3-3 with 14
all right,
minutes to
focus,
go.
Bruce, focus, podcast.
And LA needs 1 point to clinch third place. So
we'll know soon enough who wins.
Yep, we will.
All right. We shall know. And yeah, LA has to lose in regular time, I guess, for Vegas to advance against the Oilers. I'm hoping Vegas goes to the other side. I just think it would be poetic justice for them to face a couple big, tough physical teams in the first round in Dallas and Winnipeg or whoever it is they're going to have to play. All right. There ain't no easy teams in any side of it, but that's really tough, I think, over there. All right, Bruce. Two good things, two bad things, two numbers, one conundrum. What is your good thing, Amundo?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the play of Warren Fogle in this game.
Wow.
Who he was just all over it, David. And no points to show for it in 18 minutes and 24 seconds. All he had was 7 shots on net, 14 shot attempts. This after, I think he had 17 against San Jose on Monday, 14 shot attempts. And he was just a buzzsaw out there for basically the whole game, just stealing pucks. He had 2 official takeaways and just taking it hard to the net time and again. You'd think he was still going for a milestone goal, even as he got it in the last game. But I thought his effort and performance was little short of tremendous in this game. Really stood out in a game that didn't have a whole lot going for it.
14 shot attempts. It was like, yay, I don't have to pass it to Leon every time I get the puck. I can shoot myself. He was amazing, Bruce. He was amazing. And he showed what he can do, I think, on a certain level here. I mean, he's been playing so well, as we on this podcast have recognized for the last year, calendar year. He started playing this way in January 2023.
4-3 for Chicago.
Seriously.
12 minutes left. 13 minutes left. Like, LA just completely crapped the bed to start the third period. They were leading 3-1. They were out shooting Chicago something like 24-6. After the second period, and bang, bang, bang. Wow.
No one wants to play the Oilers, Bruce.
Well, that may be the takeaway here. This kind of blows me away. I thought when Vegas lost, it was a done deal. But, I mean, how do you blow it? Anyway, we'll continue to keep an eye on it. Anyway, 17 shot attempts for Fogle against San Jose, 8 last night. And 14 tonight. And I think tops on the team in all 3 games, for whatever that's worth. What it says is that after, I would say, a couple of weeks of not doing a whole hell of a lot, he really came alive and was feeling it. And good on him for carrying the colors.
9 major contributions to grade A shots. That's like a McDavid-like total. And he had 5 grade A shots himself out of his, whatever, 14 shot attempts. So that's heck of a game for Warren Fogle. Too bad he deserved a point or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my good thing is the three young speedsters, McLeod, Holloway, and Philip Broberg. McLeod was all over this game. He was making plays. He and Fogle were really playing well together. And it's to the point where, you know, if you're looking for who should play on a third line, like, because they have kind of seven players right now vying for the top six, Fogle sure combines well with Ryan McLeod. And I wish we'd seen, did they have Holloway on their line? No, they didn't, did they? Or did they mix up their lines tonight?
They kind of mixed them up. Because they had 11 forwards only. They actually played a man short despite having six extra players available. They sat out seven.
Brilliant. I love it. I love that they were resting up their players, giving Nuge the night off as well. Anyway, so they were mixing and matching. But if a line of Holloway, Fogle, and McLeod, I wish we'd seen that a little bit more in the regular season, because that line would be so blindingly fast. And McLeod and Fogle are very responsible defensive players, so it might also work in the defensive end. But anyway, Holloway did score a goal, power play goal. Very nice play where Philip Broberg drove the puck on net, quickly drove it on net, and Holloway tipped it in as Connor Brown screened the goalie. Philip Broberg, he didn't have a perfect game, but I think he was the only defenseman. Was he the only one who wasn't on for a goal against? He was on for a goal against,
but he was also on for the goal for. So he was even.
No, that was a power play goal, Bruce.
Tonight, that was the first.
He was on for a power play goal. I don't think he was on for a goal against.
The first goal. Oh, wrong. I'm looking
He'd be minus one.
I'm looking at the wrong sheet.
You're looking at the wrong sheet.
Last night's game. Edmonton's goal was a power play goal, Stetcher, meaning he was not on the ice for any goals against.
Correct. Neither was Stetcher. So both those guys weren't. Philip Broberg is, man, that guy. Once he gets his full confidence going, Bruce, I just think they're going to be glad they drafted Philip Broberg. I hope he's in Edmonton when that happens, because he is big and fast. And he made a couple of nice moves in the offensive end where he was slinking around down low, twisting that way and turning the other with the puck. He's very close. And his skating is... Well, Darnell Nurse is a really good skater. Philip Broberg's a superior skater to Nurse. And... there's not a defenseman on the team. Kulak is a really good skater, but he doesn't have the edges as Broberg does. Combined with his size, Bruce, I just can't wait for Paul Coffey to have a full year of Philip Broberg, because I think that's going to be outstanding if that happens. And I think that he made enough of an impression in these games that if he's with the goal of Stetcher ahead of him, they might. I don't think they should. I don't think Stetcher's a better player than Broberg right now, but they like their veterans. But if they have to call on him in the playoffs, I think they're not going to hesitate to do it. I think Knobloch got a good look at him. He saw that this is a player who's got his defensive fundamentals down, and if he just keeps it simple, can get through a playoff game. So we might see him. We might see him yet this year in the Oilers uniform. Holloway, another solid game. So, go ahead.
Broberg coughed up the puck right very first shift, I think, or maybe second shift, where he came out behind his own net and just dribbled off his stick right in front.
That did happen.
And I'm going, you know, it's time to lose the deer in the headlights look when you're out there. And to his credit, that went away. And he made some pretty sweet plays there. Like, he's got some real capacity to win battles and just skate away from them, because he can just do these quick reverses where he just takes the puck in a different direction and walks away because the other guy has gone flying off in the other direction, right? He showed a couple of those in this game, and as you say, a really nice point shot that was tipped in. So the kids they called up from from the minors were the ones key players on tonight's lone happy moment where they actually got one not only past the goalie but past the goalposts as well.
All right, your bad thing.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the National Hockey League schedule maker or makers. I'm envisioning an endless scene of monkeys with typewriters that come up with the NHL schedule this year that had 10 games in the last 2 days of the season. For whatever reason, they stretched it out to a Thursday. 10 games in a 32-team league where one team, Edmonton Oilers, played two of those games. And two kind of far-flung places, very far-flung from home, a little 5,000-kilometer air miles in the last 2 days of the season. And they got what they deserved because this game was crap, David. It was 4-0 at the 10-minute mark of the first period, and it wound up 5-1, and it was barely fit to watch. I mean, Oilers, you know, once they were down and out because they were completely overwhelmed early, and you could sort of see Colorado going, well, we can either beat them 25-0 or maybe we don't have to sweat so much, because they were stinging from a couple of real bad losses, the Avalanche, and they iced their A team against an Edmonton team that was home and cooled out. And in part because of the schedule and in part because it's probably good strategy anyway, the Oilers benched their entire power play, and they benched, I think their top 6 point scorers and their top 6 goal scorers with Ekholm and Kane added to the list. And it was, the resistance was kind of wet paper bag material in the first 10 minutes. And then the whole rest of the game, like 50 minutes of this game, was garbage time. And I mean, you could argue even earlier than that, but certainly once it was 4-0, and the schedule was just so poorly drawn up, with no semblance of fairness or balance, and it's just not good enough for a professional league. Like, why wouldn't they have it set up where all the teams were playing on the last day of the season? Instead, they had some done on Monday or Tuesday, and other teams still playing hard. I mean, Colorado, they had 3 days off before this game. And Edmonton played 2 of the 3 days. Yeah. And now 3rd and 4. Well, that's a mismatch anytime. But if this game had meant something, that really would not have been a fair fight even then.
And keep it simple. Just in the last 2 games, play your closest geographic teams. And every team's play their closest geographic teams. How hard is that? I mean, you just write that in first. Those are the first two games you mark in on your schedule as the last two games. And then you know that you're getting it right. Yeah, I agree.
Although the East, where they do have these short road trips no matter what, played 0 games in the last 2 days. So anyway, and at least they've kind of figured some of it out in that in the playoffs they're starting in the East on Saturday. And the West starts to get involved on Sunday, and it looks like the Oilers will play on Monday. So at least they have a couple of days to get their win back and prepare for whoever's leading. It's still 4-3 with 5 minutes left, David.
Indeed.
So anyway, they got at least get a couple of days back. So at least they quasi fixed it, but just the way the schedule was backloaded was insane. So that's my bad thing. With a special shout out bad thing for whoever on the Oilers approved this mess.
Bruce,
the team doesn't have any input in something that egregious.
It wasn't good. My bad thing was the play of Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci this game, even though it's a nothing game. Darnell Nurse made 5 major mistakes on grade A shots against, and Cody Ceci made 6 major mistakes on grade A shots against, all told, both at even strength and shorthanded. They were out for a number of goals against. I'm just going to focus on one play. It's actually garbage time. It's early in the third period. It's already 5-1. But Ceci decides the Oilers are playing a zone defense this year. But all of a sudden, Ceci's chasing his player like it was last year against Vegas in the playoffs. He's chasing his player out towards, you know, the ringette line above the circles. And down low now is Darnell Nurse covering two players. One of them is Mikko Rantanen. Anyway, there's the puck gets worked back from the to the point, and there's a shot on net, and Rantanen is there to tip him because CeCe's way out of the picture, and they play a zone, and no one's covering for him because they're not thinking that way. CeCe's got to be in his position. He's supposed to hold, and instead he's charging around like he was, like he doesn't know that, like he hasn't had 82 games to figure it out. So then the puck goes into the corner, and CeCe charges. He's now back. He's gotten back into the position, but he's on the wrong side, and Nurse is kind of standing there covering no one. Meanwhile, Mikko Rantanen, who's just tipped the first shot on net. Exactly, Mikko Rantanen. And Darnell Nurse doesn't make the read. He just kind of watches, stands there. He's not, I don't know. And the puck goes out to Rantanen, who gets a great shot on net, like a five-alarm shot. Bruce, to me, the biggest question mark on the Oilers heading into the playoffs is this partnership of Nurse and CeCe. They've got to get their shit together. They've got to play better. They've got to play sound, fundamental defensive hockey. First, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth. And it's getting frustrating watching that not happening. And it was frustrating in this game, nothing game. Would have been nice to see them just keep it simple, keep it safe. But they seem at this point like, anyway, they've done it in the past. They have played stretches of solid defensive hockey. This is my biggest worry, though, heading into the playoffs, whether they can do it right now, whether they can get it together.
Yeah, there was a couple of nice defensive plays early in the game from CeCe made one, Nurse made one, I think Kulak made one, where, you know, they had a good stick around the net to save a tap-in. And that was just under the sweltering pressure that started the game. But those few defensive plays got lost in the swarm of shots and goals, you know, in that opening 10 minutes. And after that, the damage was done. And, you know, Oilers actually played all right the rest of the way.
I liked the game, actually.
And they, you know, from 4-0 to 5-1, if anything, they were maybe slightly the even team. And But they never had a chance. There was no way they were going to ever get back in that game, and they didn't. But it doesn't much matter.
It doesn't. After the second period, it was 9-3 for grade A shots for the Oilers. So don't worry, Bruce. LA's not coming back. They're tanking. Both these teams do not want to play the Oilers, and it's coming out in their play tonight. And I think they found out
Vegas lost, and they're like, oh, well, we better lose too.
The very telling thing that we're witnessing here. Well, I'm not witnessing it. I'm just talking about something I'm not even watching, so I have no idea.
Vegas didn't look good. They showed the end of that game too.
That's how I take it, Bruce. This is a very good sign for the Oilers, whoever they play in the next round. We are at our numbers. What's your number?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 49, which is the number of wins that Edmonton ends the season with. So 60% of their 82 games. In other words, a little frustrating. They did, you know, they had 48 with five games to go. And of course, those games are all packed into a week, and they wound up going 1-3-1. Sort of a bookend to the 2-9-2 that they started the season with. And almost all, you know, 46 of the wins packed into the 2-9-1 they started the season with. So into the sort of 65 games in between, they got almost all of their wins. And, you know, pretty impressive number. But after last year's 50, you know, you want it, it's kind of nice to sort of become a regular 50-win team. And so in the end, it's a little bit of a bitter taste to, you know, just get so close to it and then just not almost have reason to win games at the very end. So, but that's as good a number as I got on this night. I've already given you Fogel's 14 shot attempts.
Here's a number. The Kings have outshot Chicago 13-3. So it's maybe I'm being a little hard on the Kings. That's a pretty solid outshooting.
33-13 on the night.
Yeah, exactly.
And Talbot has let four in on 13 shots, and he looked pretty dreadful on the two that I saw.
It is Cam Talbot.
I didn't see the 4-3. Yeah, well, so maybe that's the team we wanted to be playing. But
it's the team I was hoping they'd play, but not to be, it looks like. Eh? There is now two, a minute 49.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, Bruce, my number is 5 for 5. And that's five playoff seasons in Ken Holland's 5 years as GM of the Oilers. When he took over the team, there was credible rumors that Connor McDavid was very unhappy with the situation in Edmonton. The Oilers had lost, you know, Elliot Friedman reported that, as I recall, at the time. And I don't take a lot of the rumors out of Toronto seriously, but I do take it when Elliot says it very seriously. And they had just missed the playoffs 2 years in a row under Peter Chiarelli. In retrospect, Chiarelli made some terrible trades, but it's also fair to say that under Chiarelli, the Oilers were significantly sidelined because their best left shot defenseman, Andre Sekera, got badly injured and was never the same player in 2017. What happened?
Power play for LA. Puck over glass.
Power play for LA.
1:42 left, so they're going to get a 6-on-4.
We'll see. So they lost Sekera to injury. They lost Klefbom. Klefbom was never the same after the 2017 playoffs, in my opinion. He got injured and was never the same player. So they were significantly down under Chiarelli. Anyway, Ken Holland's come in, and he's made a number of good deals, Bruce. Brought in Matthias Ekholm, brought in Zach Hyman, traded for Warren Fogle. That was not a popular move. Did LA score?
They scored.
Yes.
4-4, 1:21 left.
Can they do it?
Well, can they hold on against mighty Chicago for 1:21 to get it to overtime?
Seeing the shots on goal in that game.
Victor Arvidsson, we're going to hate him in about 10 minutes. Yeah, one thing I can tell you this, David, I'm going to have zero problem hating whichever team Edmonton plays in the first round. Zero problems.
Yeah. I would much rather play LA, see the Oilers play LA, just because I just think it's a fitting punishment for Vegas to go over that other side. I think the other side is a little harder. Because in my opinion, the Oilers are the hardest team, but Dallas is just a tick below the Oilers. And I don't think Vancouver is as hard as some of the other top teams, which I may regret saying shortly in a few weeks. But anyway, Ken Holland, he got it done, Bruce. Here's what Ken Holland has done, just looking up and down the roster. Traded Tyson Barrie for Ekholm, giving Evan Bouchard a good shot. He signed Hyman as a free agent. He locked in Nugent Hopkins on a reasonable contract. What? Did they score?
No. Doughty coughed it up in the corner and then dribbled into Talbot and he belched out this big rebound into the slot. Just like, geez, I hope Talbot starts in the series. That's all I can say based on what I'm seeing here.
All right. What else did he do? He signed Darnell Nurse to a big contract, which may or may not work out. He signed Cody Ceci, who's turned out to be a good player. He traded for Brett Kulak, who's turned out to be a super solid player. He brought in Corey Perry for nothing. He brought in Connor Brown, which may or may not turn out well in these playoffs. He brought in Matthias Janmark, who I think is a really good player. He brought in Vincent Desharnais.
It's the Kings.
Good. And he brought in Calvin Pickard, and he promoted Stuart Skinner. All in all, Ken Holland has gotten it right way more than he's gotten it wrong. Now, I'm not going to say that about the draft because I can't speak to that without studying it. But my gut instinct is that maybe they didn't do so well in the draft. Although Broberg and Holloway are starting to look pretty damn good. And the LA Kings, it is.
Going good, eh?
And Broberg, man, that was as good as he's looked to me since he's gotten in Edmonton. He looked like he He looked like he could become a really good NHL player. And I just want to see him work with Coffey. I hope Coffey comes back next year, because I'm not certain that he will. You know, he seemed reluctant to coach, so maybe he won't.
Be a one-off. It's certainly possible. He's an interim.
Yeah, I just think he would be great for Philip Broberg. Okay, yes. Let's move on to our conundrum, Bruce. It's the LA Kings. How do you crack that nut? Sounds like you put shots on net.
Yeah, like anything. 1-3-1. Oh, here we go. Schedule. Monday, Wednesday. Game 3, it says April 26th, whatever day that is, which is next
Monday, what Friday. Time does it say what time?
It might have Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. It looks like they're just going to start.
Cool.
It's like they're just going to
3 years in a row that we've had the Kings, eh? This is the third year in a row?
Yep. Shades of 1989 to 92, Oilers played the Kings 4 years in a row, the first 4 years after the Gretzky transaction to LA. And the Kings won the first series in 89, and then the Oilers took them out in 90, 91, and 92 to level that playing field. And then it was like 30 years of fallow, and then they played them again in 22 and 23 with the Oilers winning those two series as well. So the Kings must think of the Oilers as the way we think of Dallas Stars at this point. When they run into Edmonton in the playoffs, their playoffs come to an end. So let's hope that tradition continues.
You know, they've got a good top nine forwards. I'll give them that. Kempe, Fiala, Kopitar, Trevor Moore, Quinton Byfield, Philippe Deneau, Pierre-Luc Dubois. That's eight.
Victor Arvidsson.
And Arvidsson, nine. Yeah, they've got a good top nine. They've got Drew Doughty, who's a fantastic hockey player.
Kings win in overtime, but that goal doesn't really change anything, but it just puts them 1 point ahead of Vegas. They already have the tiebreaker.
So Cam Talbot has a .915 save percentage this year, Bruce. His backup, David Rittich, has a .921 save percentage. So they've had a good save percentage, this team. Uh-huh. You know, sometimes I can come down to the hometown shot clock guy too. I'm going to suggest, but they're a good team.
Kempe scored. That's a guy that.
That's the guy that scares me as well. Kempe scares me. Arvidsson scares me.
Big, fast, talented Byfield too. Big, fast, skilled.
And they've got the hated Mikey Anderson, dirty player, who tries to injure other players. Hmm. So that's something to think about. And they've got Carl Grundstrom, who charges the net hard, as I recall, and puts pucks in after he bashes the goalie right through. They've got Gavrikov, who's a fantastic defensive defenseman, and one of the few defensive defensemen that can defend McDavid okay. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like Morrissey or McCarr, like defensemen who really, or what's the guy in Carolina that can Slavin. Who can really skate with McDavid, but he's really good. So this is going to be a very tough series. But I'm glad it's LA still. I just think the Oilers match up well against the LA Kings. The Oilers' speed is superior to the Kings, and the Oilers' aggression. The Oilers are aggressive enough and fast enough to break through that wall of the Kings' defense, that very conservative style they play. And
I think and hope they're patient enough too.
Because
that was the format they used in beating the Kings in the last couple of games that were here, 4-2 and 4-1. And there was a lot of 1-3-1 going on. And what you don't want to do is see the 1-3-1 setting up when you're behind on the scoreboard. And that last game in particular, that never happened. And Edmonton forged the lead and said, you know, come at me, bro, because, you know, at a certain point, LA had to break out of that deadly, boring style. And start to bring it. So I'm not looking forward to the series stylistically. I'm not sure it'll be real exciting hockey, but you never know. Like you just list, I mean, the top nine of the Kings, there's a lot of talented players in there. So it'll be a test for 100% sure.
So Vegas plays Dallas and Winnipeg plays Colorado.
And Nashville plays Vancouver.
I just love this. So to get to the conference final, they've got to beat Vancouver, be the best team of Vancouver, Nashville, and Los Angeles. And you've got four heavyweight sluggers, Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas, and Las Vegas, just absolutely bashing away at each other on the other side. I like it, Bruce. I like it a lot. What do you think? I can't hear you. Can't hear you, Bruce.
Yeah, saw a Vancouver fan on Twitter saying they were real happy that the way one of the games wound up, that Vegas or Vancouver clinched a spot against Nashville. And saying that the Vancouver just basically gotten a bye to the second round. And I'm thinking, boy.
Never say that. Never say that. But it's a Vancouver.
That's
would have
going a in a few saved against, folders, I can tell you.
Vancouver would have, well, that's just a fan. Vancouver would have a much tougher time against LA or Vegas, bigger, tougher defensive teams than Nashville, I think. I think that's fair to say. But these are all really good teams in the playoffs. The Oilers could get upset. Like they could be, they only finish. What did they finish? 5 points ahead of the Kings. This is going to be a tough, the Kings were plus 41 on the year. The Oilers were plus 57. There's not a lot separating the teams over the full year. And,
well, like last year against Vegas, it just came down to a couple of plays and, you know, a couple of calls and a couple of moments of execution or lack thereof in games 5 and 6. And even if you're, you know, you're going to the series as a clear favorite, what's that mean? 60-40 that you're going to win it? Well, 40's a lot.
Yeah, 40 is a lot.
So there's nothing guaranteed. And there, you know, there's, unlike, I think, maybe the East, there are, I don't think, any weak teams that made the playoffs in the West.
And in the East?
Washington minus 37 going up against Rangers. You'd like
the
to
Islanders
think.
Minus 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple teams that are pretty marginal.
Yeah, Tampa's a good. They had a turtle race for the wild card spots, eh?
Who plays? Washington plays. No, excuse me. Tampa plays Toronto or Boston?
Boston plays Toronto and Tampa plays Florida, Battle of Florida.
Oh, that's tough for Florida. That's tough for Florida, yeah. Yeah, they can put up with Kucherov diving all over the place. It's part of my campaign to deny Kucherov the MVP award, Bruce, is to badmouth him at every opportunity. Did you know that he was the king of overtime points? I think you've pointed that.
Empty net points.
Yeah, absolutely. Not overtime. Empty net points. Yeah, I think 14. You pointed that out. Yeah.
At seven in the last month.
Was it 14 or was it more? I thought it was more than 14.
I think it was 14. Maybe snuck in another one while I was paying attention. But he had seven in the last month.
Yeah.
And he got one assist in Toronto that was as phantom an assist as I can remember since Marcel Dion played in the Fabulous Forum.
Oh, really? Was it?
Oh, didn't even touch him. And it was, and the goal was scored, like it was in the defensive zone and puck went down. Two other guys took it down, scored, and they retroactively awarded him an assist and he wound up with 100 right on the nose.
Seriously?
Seriously. It was like a hometown decision, except for it was a road game. I just don't get it. Anyway.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's under miscellaneous at NHL.com. You can find things like posts and empty net goals in there. And Kucherov, 7 goals, 7 assists, 14 points, empty net points, all-time record for empty net points in a season. Because, of course, there's so many goalie pulls so early that there's a ton of points being scored. And,
yeah.
And it's I've become quite sour towards empty net goals in general because they corrupt the outcomes of games. Like, you know, you can say, well, this game wasn't close. It was 4-1. And then you find it was 2-1 with 30 seconds left. And team gave in two empty netters because they gave one in and then they pulled the guy again. Another one right away. And but most corruptive of all was the empty netter that eliminated teams from the playoffs. That was a game winner and scored in a tie game. I mean,
it's got so that was control. A nothing game for the Flyers, eh? And what's his noodle?
Well, it was a very much a something game. They had to win it in regulation, but by the time they got around to pulling the goalie, they had been eliminated by what had happened in another game.
Yeah,
they pulled him anyway with 3 minutes left.
He knew that, didn't he?
Tortorella. Well, the color commentator between the benches knew it before the goalie pull and told us.
Oh, so we don't know what Tortorella knew. Maybe he didn't even know.
It was only like 1 or 2 minutes, but it was like Detroit tied it up with 3 seconds left. And when they did, Philly couldn't touch Detroit anymore. And so we went, well, we know what to do about Detroit. We'll just sink them.
Such is life.
If I was a Detroit fan, I would be so friggin' sour about that. Oh, man. Or a Pittsburgh fan.
Yeah, I would have liked to see Sidney Crosby
imagine
in the playoffs.
Imagine losing on it. Yeah.
And I would have liked to see Detroit in the playoffs, too. They were winning some close games at the end. Well, Bruce, you got to write the game grades tonight.
I think they'll be a little bit abrupt.
All right.
Isn't worthy of a whole lot of commentary, and nor do I think the readers will be particularly interested in reading a loquacious report.
All right. Well, Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.